It's always good to have you in here, Quint.
It's good to be here, Jack. Thank you.
How much hand-holding are you doing right now?
Very, very little. The markets are only a few percentage points off all-time highs. We had a pretty significant bounce off the lows. We did have what was interesting as a statistic that I read was that 10% decline, which transpired over 13 days, was one of the shortest 10% declines that we've seen in the last 30-some years or something like that. So it just shows you how quickly things can turn in the marketplace. But we try to be very proactive in our communication and our approach. And we try to, we're compensated to manage money. So we're not compensate to index allocate for our managed accounts and then just ride the wave. We are compensated to have some foresight, take some action. And so I'm very, very proud of the fact that to start this year in January, when we had an 8% bounce in the markets in the first 3 weeks of 2018, we were selling into that. So we were raising some cash. Doesn't mean we avoided the decline. We got hit as well, but we were letting our clients know, hey, this is a little absurd. We're coming off a 20% plus year in 2017. We're now up almost double digits for the year in the first 3 weeks. I think it's wise to take some chips off the table. And that's what we've done. So we have a lot of cash. We actually redeployed. We bought some things into the weakness over the last couple of weeks. You know, it's stodgy names, things like General Motors, great company, great balance sheet, nice dividend, a stock that I've been waiting to pull back a little bit, and it did, and we took a position. So we're being proactive, which means we're trying to be ahead of this and communicate with our clients, and hopefully they feel very good.
Everybody's nervous, though.
As they should be. I mean, there's a lot going on, and I think the big thing for me, which is a little bit frustrating, is that it's not accurately portrayed. And so I feel like the general public is not getting the correct information. So let's just have a dialogue, Jack.
All right.
What's the biggest news going on in the economic? Well, I mean, there's a lot, but what would you say is one of the bigger news events transpiring in the
tariffs?
Steel tariffs. Okay, steel and aluminum tariffs. So, what is that? Tell me what you understand about that.
Very little.
but I mean, in theory, I mean, I understand very little. But I mean, I'm trying to gauge, I'm putting you on the spot because. I mean, it's a good representation of the general public, right?
The ignorance of the general public.
Well, and yeah. I don't mean that. Yeah. This isn't man on the street.
No,
I'm seriously not trying to do that. But what is the media then? What is the consensus in the media saying about these tariffs?
That's going to negatively affect our economy because people that we're going to charge the tariffs to, they're going to start charging us for the things that we bring over from wherever they are.
So basically what you're saying is that because we imposed a 20% or 25% tariff on a product, then we are going to, in some roundabout way, we are going to then have to pay more for that product, which is basically inflationary and will cost us more and will slow down the economic engines that we've been seeing. Okay, so yes in theory and no in some practical sense, and here's why. The number, do you know where our number one steel import country is? That is Canada, yeah. So do you know who's also been exempt from these tariffs?
Canada.
Yeah. So does that make any sense at all?
No.
Okay, so with that knowledge, then the general public is probably scratching their head going, then why did we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain to our public why we've done this. Have you heard in the media the country that now we are talking about tariffs starting a trade war with? What's the country that you're starting to hear thrown around in the media as the United States starting a trade war with that we probably have the biggest trade imbalance with in the world?
China,
yeah. Right. But again, we don't import any steel or very, very little from China. So it doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make.
So here's what I'm hearing in the media. This is what I'm hearing,
okay.
And nobody's questioning it.
Okay.
We're imposing steel tariffs. Our president is starting a trade war with China, and that's terrible. Okay. It makes no connection whatsoever. Makes no sense. Yet it's postulated or sent out through the media every single day. So the general public hears steel tariffs, trade war with China. Makes no sense to me because we don't import steel. Yes, somebody will say, well, we do. It's very, very small. And, oh, by the way, we exempted the largest country that we import steel from. So why did this happen? Okay, let me explain to the public what is become conventional wisdom or general understanding among almost the entire business community in the world. And that is this. China for years has been dumping, and that's just a basic word for literally doing what they're doing, throwing on the global markets steel at rock bottom prices. I mean, literally pennies on the dollar. Their oversupply of steel in their country is so great that they have just been getting rid of it any way they can. That is not necessarily, we are not buying that. We are not going, they're not selling that to us. They are just selling it to the lowest bidder. And it's really, by all accounts, not showing up in these, you know, broad economic reports. Well, where does China export to? Because the conventional wisdom is that they're just dumping it on the market. And so what the next step is that those countries, many of those countries that are buying that dumped steel on the market for rock bottom prices, are turning around and exporting it to us at much higher prices. So what is happening and what has been happening, what I love is I've known this and I wanted to cite some sources. And so I went on and I was like, I wrote in Google, I said, China dumping steel. This is a subject matter that has been written about and talked about for the last 10 years. It's a very, very long time. It's been written about. It's been a problem. What has been transpiring in the global community, which is artificially depressed steel prices to a level that has not allowed American corporations to compete. So understand this. If a country is not playing by the rules, they are basically producing as much as they can for labor costs that are at rock bottom prices and then dumping it onto the market, purchased by other countries that are then selling it to us, we as a country with minimum wage, healthcare, costs, et cetera, not to mention EPA standards, we cannot produce steel. We cannot make products at that low of a level. So we had to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to stop it. And so what happens is I love this. The president says steel tariff. And again, he exempts our largest import. He's not exempting Canada. Or I'm sorry, he is exempting Canada. If he really wanted all of the steel to be produced in the United States, he would never have exempted Canada and Mexico.
So why did he do that?
He did that to send a message that said, all of you other countries that are buying this steel at rock bottom prices, you are not going to be able to turn around and sell it to us. We are no longer your fool. That is what has happened. That's why, okay, the media picks up this tidbit. So people in the business community, they go, well, boy, that was a shot across the bow and a message to China. And they look and they go, what do you mean a shot across the bow to China? We don't even import to China. But the business community knows that they've been dumping it on the market. So it matters not, okay, whether we officially import or not. That steel is getting to us.
Somebody texted us, says, who are the other countries? What's the evidence?
Who are the other countries?
I assume that are going to be...
Australia, South Korea. I mean, just go through the list. You can just
basically everybody but Mexico and Canada.
That's correct. Yeah, and that's a tremendous amount. But again, it's more of a message. This is not something that is going to dramatically impact right now the steel industry. It is a message that says you can't keep dumping this on the market. Now, that's number one. Number two, the president just blocked the Qualcomm Broadcom acquisition. So the Broadcom, Avago, was going to be purchasing Qualcomm, all right? And President just shut that down. And he shut that down for national security reasons. And the reason he shut that down was a lot of the development that is done by these technology companies is done in China. And a lot of these companies have basically these national security secrets or our technological advancements are being done and implemented in a country that notoriously has ripped off our technology and recreated it. So he shut that down. So again, what he's doing is sending a message. Now here's where it's dangerous.
Okay.
This is what people again. I like the fact that we're making countries play by the rules that we play by. That is important. I really believe that. And I think that this appointment by Larry Kudlow to the economic the National Economic Advisor to replace Cohen, who stepped down, was a big deal. And the reason I like that is because you've watched Larry Kudlow's tone change. The first news came out about tariffs and he went, no, wait a second, this is wrong. And he wrote this big open his op-ed talking about how terrible this was. He has since retracted that and said, no, I like this. We need to cut down on these unfair trade practices and we need to work out this trade imbalance. So he's on board. So nonetheless, now, the concern is that the retaliation, okay, that would come, the most dramatic retaliation could be China selling U.S. Treasury bonds. They are one of the largest holders of our debt. And if they were to start dumping the Treasury bonds, that would spike interest rates. And we are already in a rising interest rate environment, and that is dangerous. So we're at a war with no bullets right now,
yeah,
basically.
Cold War, yeah. Quint Tatro is with us, and the company that he owns and operates is Jewel, J-O-U-L-E, Jewel Financial. It's right behind PNC Bank, downtown Lexington. And his website, if you want more information about any of the stuff that they offer, is retirementky.com. Right now, our phone lines are 253-5959. Touch *590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty@wvlkam.com or our Atlas Contracting text line 253-5959. Text came in during the break, said, would it not be better to name the other countries and target them? And didn't he exempt Australia?
I don't think he's done. I think they've given 15 days to negotiate with countries that want an exemption, and I think that there's been positive talks about that. But I do not believe that that has hit the wires, that is official yet. But just to put it into context, again, don't miss the discussion. This is targeted, and this is my opinion because nobody's going to write about this, but this is the common opinion among most. This is targeted against China. And again, the confusion lies, well, people would easily say, yeah, but we don't import from China. So the biggest is Canada. Underneath that is, this is from 2017, a report. Biggest is Canada, then Brazil, South Korea, Mexico, Russia. South Korea is 10%, Russia is 9%, Turkey 7%, Japan 5%, Taiwan 4%, Germany 3%, India 2%. Australia doesn't even show up on that map or on that pie chart. So the concern is, and again, this is just the general understanding, is that countries like South Korea, Russia, and Japan and Turkey buy that steel and turn around and sell it to us. And so, again, it's the concern or the direction is the trade imbalance with China. That is what is ultimately he's going after there.
And you think making people play by the rules is a good thing, but you're a little afraid the retaliation from China. So what's your opinion of that?
I think we're going to call their bluff. I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, okay. They'd be foolish to. So I think here's the uncomfortable. Here's what the world and even me, this is what we're uncomfortable with. All right. We now have a president who is used to pushing his chips around the table to muscle other players. He is used to it. It's what he does. He pushes his chips around the table. He has a big stack. And he does this in business, and this is how he's done very, very well. As a country, we are generally, many people who are concerned about this have this conservative nature that we're uncomfortable with this sort of confrontation. At the root of it, that's one man's opinion, my opinion. But when I look at this and I go, ooh, what makes me uncomfortable about this? Well, what makes me uncomfortable about it is the fact that a majority of the U.S. debt is owned by China, second to Japan. And if they decided to say, you know what, it's game on. Here we go. We're dumping treasuries. There's not enough buyers. Interest rates would move up very quickly. And that would definitely clamp down on our economy. But here's what China has to think about. Who buys all their stuff? We do. So if they want to play that game and they want to throw us into an economic tailspin, that's to their own demise. All right. So he's pushing the chips around the table. Now, I know what people are going to say, and me included, is I've studied Trump for years. I mean,
Way before he was president, a long time.
Yeah. I mean, every business kid did.
Yeah.
Is that the dilemma and the struggle is that when he loses, he's gone. He bounces, meaning, you know, he lets other people clean up the mess,
yeah,
you know, whether it's bankruptcy protection, yeah, or whatnot. And so the concern is that thought of, well, what if he pushes the chips around the table and somebody calls our bluff and we do go through this? So he's pushing it around. And I'll tell you that this is what I know for sure. Okay. And again, I'm prefacing this with this is an opinionated show, but this is, I love it because this is what, I'm not reciting other people's stuff.
Right.
So I'm going, 6 o'clock today. I've never done this before, but I was invited to go on to, Daybreak Bloomberg, television, Asia. So I'm going on it's obviously broadcast here, or I'm, you know, doing satellite here, but I'm going to be on the Daybreak Asia television show for Bloomberg Global.
That's cool.
I'm excited about it.
Sure.
But I'm talking about these ideas, these opinions. And again, so somebody said, well, you know, I disagree with you. Great. Please do, because I'm not citing somebody else. This is Quintetro's view, but this is my understanding of it. And so, again, the concern is that he would tuck tail and go and leave us picking up the pieces.
I see what you mean. And he said something to the effect, it looks like we're getting close to having the cabinet that I wanted.
Oh, yeah.
He appointed him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well,
what you're saying is when things go south, he goes north. And
I think, but from that respect, though, I think his first appointments were more bipartisan and more trying to be balanced than I believe Trump really is. I think he came in and said, okay, I have these ideas and opinions, but I'm also going to bring in other people that can cross balance. And it didn't work. And so now he's getting rid of them.
Real quick here before we go to break, this is good, and I want to see if you agree or disagree. You'll probably be a little of both. This is from Kinu. He says, Trump is a genius strategist, is using the threat of tariff to force China to restrain Kim Jong-un, North Korea, and to force fair market terms under NAFTA.
No question. I didn't even throw in the North Korea thing there, but he's absolutely right. There's multiple levels here. Whoever, that's spot on.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Back with Quint Tatro. I like it when the president listens to us, Quint. Apparently he is. Brad, tell me about the tweet that the...
Yeah, this just 6 minutes ago, so just before the break, the president...
When you were making your comment.
Right, yeah. The president tweets, he goes, we do have a trade deficit with Canada, as we do with almost all countries, in parentheses, some of them massive. PM Justin Trudeau of Canada, a very good guy, doesn't like saying that Canada has a surplus versus the U.S., in parentheses, negotiating. But they do. They almost all do, and that's how I know.
So, he's... paying attention.
So he's listening in on the stream, I guess.
And I'll tell you, somebody, just to going back to the original questions that we had, somebody just sent me this message to my personal email. It said a figure from the Department of Commerce, International, I guess, the Department of Commerce, that the top 10 countries receiving China's steel export, number one is South Korea. Receiving 14 million metric tons of China steel exports. That was in 2016. That is what is reported. So it again goes hand in hand with crimping down on that. If in fact we then are buying steel from South Korea, that's one of our biggest importers. In the previous message from Kinyu or the gentleman or gal or whomever it was that sent in,
Kinyu
talking about the president's methodology by which to also handle or have other countries help in working with North Korea. And not working with, but to kind of, you know, crimp down on, if you will. So again, it's a big chess game that we're all involved in, and it just seems like it seems to me like the general media just doesn't represent it correctly more often than not. It's very frustrating.
When you say general media, you're talking about
mainstream media. Yeah. So when
are very much left leaning, and they want to make the president look bad if that's possible.
Yeah, right? and even the other side. I mean, even the other side is when the tariffs were announced. You know, the right or the conservative side would comes out and says, you know, whoa, you know, this isn't very pro business. Like, what's happening here? And then again, they start bringing on guests that are talking about. You know, trade wars and how that's terrible. And then Cohen steps down. And again, it throws the business community for a loop. And you really have to take a step back and think, okay, then why is this happening? And again, this is the puzzle that I'm piecing together based on what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. In the last segment, I got a little thrown off track and I forgot my train of thought. But I was going to say that the one thing I believe without a shadow of a doubt that all of this comes back to create in our country is inflation. I believe that all of this is inflationary. Now, even if you were to remove tariffs and remove trade war discussions and remove, you know, these sort of international geopolitical things, I believe that simple economic growth and development and probably a coming infrastructure plan and global demand is what has sparked the raw asset prices and why we are seeing inflation. But the additional things, the tariffs, the trade wars, et cetera, interest rates, you name it, are adding fuel to that fire. So from a portfolio perspective, because at the end of the day, I'm still an investment manager, from a portfolio perspective, I think you've got to be hedged to make sure you are participating with inflation.
Here's a couple of texts from Ed. He said, would not China take a big loss if they sold their bonds, which are at a lower rate than the current rate?
Now, bonds have been going up for the last 10 years, 15 years. So we've only seen a retracement in bonds in the last, you know, 12 months. So they would do very well. They've probably done extremely well on the principal value of those bonds. And again, that's just from understanding where bonds have gone. Now, with that being said, if they start dumping bonds onto the market, that depresses the price. And then ultimately, you know, that might balance out. But no, bonds have gone up for the last several years. And China has been the biggest buyer of our bonds for probably the last decade or more. So they would do, you know, on principal balance, they would do extremely well.
Another question he had is, what is Quint's perspective on BX or Blackstone Group?
Private equity companies have done exceptionally well. They're tough to value because you can't really, you can't fully understand or properly value what is held inside their portfolio. Much of it is illiquid. Much of it is, you know, coming to market if they either, you know, spin off IPOs or do debt deals, et cetera. With that being said, I like Blackstone. I don't personally own it. I don't believe we own it in a dividend portfolio or anything like that. But my kids in the University of Kentucky, they own KKR. So they don't own Blackstone, but they own KKR. But I do like the private equity space, whether it's FIG. What is that? That's a Fortress. Actually, they were taken out. Fortress, Blackstone, KKR, etc. My preferred way to play all of that space, though, with an easier understanding of balance sheet and income statement, is Goldman Sachs. So despite Cohen leaving and maybe this negative connotation regarding Goldman Sachs, I do like Goldman Sachs. We own it. We're buying it for new folks coming in who need financial exposure.
You sort of talked about this, but you didn't get into it in another text that says, so what happens if China does decide to sell our security bonds?
Interest rates spike, and we see this economic boom that we're going through come to a screeching halt, and that would be terrible.
That'd be an awful thing.
That would not be good. Yeah, okay. It'd be terrible.
And let's see. Got another text. Let's see what this says here. Great segment and guest.
Woohoo!
There you go.
Thank you. You're welcome. Whoever that is, really appreciate it.
Yes, he is. And you were on, what, something yesterday? National?
I was on CNBC last week. What day is today? Thursday? Last week, which is exciting. I absolutely love doing the national media. I have been out of it for a while for a variety of reasons, but if you don't stay on top of it and you don't reach out, they kind of
forget about you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And we've also had a little bit of a hot hand, which, you know, comes in streaks, and that's been nice. So we've been right on a lot of things, and then they want to bring you back when you're right. And somebody says, well, what do you mean you've been right? Well, sign up for our newsletter, sign up for our email. We don't solicit, we don't sell your name, but if you go to our website, retirementky.com, right at the bottom, you can put in your email, and we write about what we see happening and what our views are. And well, I mean, we've been in steel. The kind of cool thing, I mean, when it works, you got to champion it a little bit. And look, we take our lumps too, but
yeah.
We've been an owner of steel through an ETF, which owns a basket of steel stocks, for the last almost year now. And that's for a variety of reasons. So the tariff would just added fuel to the fire. But it is a sector that is very, very attractive. We are choosing to own it through the ETF. I personally, and for a few select accounts, we own Steel Dynamics. That's one of my favorite names in the group. They're attractively valued. They're fundamentally good-looking, good balance sheet, nice growth, et cetera. So, you know, again, we've been right on a lot of things, and so the national media
picks up on that. This
sure.
is Lane. Hey, Lane, good morning.
Good morning. A friend of mine had an investment firm, invest money for her, and she ended up having to pay like a 20% fee. What should we watch out for and not get involved in that would be something like that?
Wow. Yeah. Golly, that's kind of that sounds like a hedge fund, quite honestly. Typical hedge funds have a 20% performance fee. That's the only time I've ever seen anything like that. The only other thing could be if somebody had some large gains in an insurance product and they took those and those were taxed as ordinary income. But whenever someone enters into a relationship with an advisor, they sign a fee agreement. So I think number one, to answer your question, and I always want to make sure I do that. Make sure you're with a reputable custodian. Whoever is holding your money, make sure that you know that company. So there's biggies like Charles Schwab is probably the biggest, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, Raymond James, Edward Jones. You know, make sure that you are with a reputable custodian where you know where your money is. That's number one. Number two, that also creates a layer, a barrier between you and the advisor. We use many. We have many now custodial relationships. Schwab is our biggest. And so clients of ours have money with Schwab. The only power they give us is to manage and to deduct our fee. Now that fee is agreed upon and signed in advance, and so well documented. And so you should, whomever that is, should have that fee agreement and understand it. Whenever I meet with someone for the very first time and I give them sort of our folder of interest, there's some things I'm required to give them, like our what's called an ADV, Apple Delta Victor, and it is our license to do business that I'm required to give them. I'm required to give them our confidentiality agreement. I'm not required to give them a copy of our fee agreement, but I do anyways. Why do I do that? So that if in the event they do decide to do business with us, they've had time to read it. How many times do you go into a meeting and you start signing papers and you didn't read them? And again, you say, well, you should always read them. But have you ever gone to a house closing? You're going to read all those documents? You're not going to do it. So we give it ahead of time. We want people to read it. I really do want you to read it. In the privacy of your own home, come up with questions, etc. So number one, reputable custodian. Number two, read and understand your fee agreement with your advisor. Well, that helps, my friend.
Let me ask you the question another way. If I was working for you and wanted to make money, what would I try to get my investors to invest in? The bigger fee that I would get?
Yeah, so we're not a commissionable broker. So there is nothing. We charge 1% for our – I mean, this is great. It's like I asked him to call in. We charge 1% –
You did.
No, I didn't. I don't know this guy. We charge 1% for the management of money, whether we are all cash, whether we are in mutual funds, whether we are in ETFs, whether we are individual stocks. We are a fiduciary. And what that means is we have to put the best interest of our client aside from anything else we want. That's not true for all firms. There are commissionable products that people sell to make high commissions. We don't sell those, right. So I could not tell you.
What are those products?
Those products would be annuities. Those products would be different types of insurance. Those products could be, a variety of things.
Okay.
All right.
Hope that helps.
All right.
Yeah.
There's our...
That was great.
There's our commercials.
That's a great commercial for sure.
No, it is true.
No, I mean, fiduciary is a big deal. Now, I will say that that's where everything is going. I mean, I've been blessed to be a fee-only advisor for the last 15 years. Now it's basically mandatory almost. And so I know our next level of growth is through advisors who are looking to attach to a fee-only advisor. We're looking at new relationships with quite a few. In fact, if you're an advisor out there, can I give a plug for a job? So we are looking for a client relation associate. I can't find. You talk about the labor market. We have very good pay. We have benefits. And we have a matching retirement plan. And I can't find even an applicant.
Really?
For this. It's amazing. So competitive pay, great benefits. You do not need a finance degree. You just need to be able to communicate with people and have a good work ethic. It's very simple. You can send a resume, a cover letter to HR@JOULEfinancial.com. JOULEfinancial.com. HR@JOULEfinancial. I can't find anybody. It's amazing.
That's wild.
It's unbelievable.
Really wild.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So anyways, fiduciaries are a big deal. Some people still do it, but my personal opinion is you don't go buy an investment product. You hire an investment advisor. So
yeah. All right, we got about 3 minutes remaining in the program. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Or our text line sponsored by Atlas Contracting, 253-5959. Let's see. Okay, now you take it because we've talked about basically one subject this morning. Give us 3 minutes of something else.
Sure. So let me gaze into the crystal ball and tell you what happens next, which is always dangerous, but I'm going to do it anyways.
Yeah.
We're not done going down. All right. So we're going to see some more pain in the next coming weeks and into the summer. And the reason for that is I believe it correlates with a lot of news events, but it's just time. It's time for us to experience some pain and to see some rotation. What I mean by that is there are asset classes in the marketplace that are very overvalued. And so you're walking into a store and you see a shirt that you know what it generally costs. It's $19.99 and it's selling for $49.99 and there's only one left. And you're like, what? Who is buying this? This is crazy. This is too. I can buy this shirt at $19.99. Well, no, you can't. There's one right there and it's $49.99. So you don't buy it, okay? The market in many sectors is very overvalued. And so I believe that we are long overdue for some significant rotation, and that is money selling one sector and moving into another. And that creates a lot of dislocation and a lot of volatility. And so I don't think we're done going down. I do, however, think there's opportunity on the other side of that.
Laura, we have less than 2 minutes. Good morning.
Hi. This has really been educational. I didn't realize hedge funds made 20%. And Governor Bevins has been a hedge fund manager. Now, my question is, is there anything that ties him into a fiduciary type of responsibility for handling these pension funds? I am a retired state employee, by the way. I get very little. I wasn't there that long.
So
I'm
not going to be able to provide. You know, I'll tell you what my understanding is. My understanding is he's no longer affiliated with any financial firm. And then by becoming a public official, he is certainly under a fiduciary responsibility. There's probably no law other than you're elected as a government official or a public official, and you are supposed to always be putting the interest of the public ahead of your own, for sure. That's just, I think, the definition of that role. Let me clarify one thing, though. Most hedge funds take a percentage of profits. So that's where you'll hear things like 2 in 20 or 1 in 20. What that is that's a 1 or 2% management fee, and then a 20% or even above sometimes of the profits that they are generating for clients. And people go into hedge funds to generate outsized profits. So, if somebody doubles the money and they get 100% return, then that hedge fund manager collects, 20% of that return as well. And that's also inherently why many more often than not, they're very risky, because those hedge fund managers are compensated to take that outside risk. So, again, that I just want to clarify that. They don't just generally make 20% of a fee. They make an incentive fee as well. And that's also why you can only have high net worth individuals in there who are supposed to understand that risk.